Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have Kerry Sanford, who is an ADHD compassion coach from Ballarat, Victoria. First off, before we get into who Kerry is and why she's here, let's ask her the hard question. How many times have we attempted to do this interview and not done it? Because I reckon three, but it could even be four.
Potentially for 4 months, like month-long escapades.
Yeah, I feel like the highlight was when I was flying to state for work, had no Wi-Fi, and it was super busy. When you're flying to state, you got everyone calling you and you're trying to get flights and run around. I had 2 connections. It was over a 12-hour day. And then I finally get to my hotel, turn my phone on because I don't have Instagram notifications. And Kerry has left 3 to 4 voicemails going, "Hello, is it today? Hello, I don't have a link." And like the most hilarious voice memos. "No, that's right. I think you tried to cancel, but I didn't even know it was on."
Yeah. So what was happening is your Calendly sends a reminder a week out. And when I got the reminder, attention to detail, not my strength. And so I completely missed the fact it said next week. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's on today. I don't have capacity for this. I need to tell her, like, this isn't happening. And then I think it was probably the third time I'd had to tell you that. And so I was like, okay, I'm letting down this person. I got to go in with a full-length, 2-minute recorded apology saying, "I value your time. I really do. I value the effort. But also, it's not happening today."
But it was so funny because I listened to your first one and immediately panicked, because when you have ADHD, you assume it's your fault because it usually is. So you know it's going to be your fault. If someone's made a mistake, it's probably going to be you. So the first one, I panicked because I was like, oh my God, have I not only no-showed, I've been uncontactable for 6 hours and I haven't even sent her a message to say, "I'm so sorry, I fucked up this time." And by the time I get to the end of it, it wasn't today. And it was just, it actually made my night. I had such a laugh about it, especially because it was one of the not many times that wasn't my fault.
It was never today. It was never that day. I completely can empathize with that feeling of, oh no, this is on me. But I also love that with all of my clients, my group programs, with every friend that I have with ADHD, there is never shame. There's never disappointment. There is never that guilt trip of, oh, is this like a reflection of how much you value our friendship or value this client relationship? And it's, no, I just have ADHD and I'm a human.
Now, Kerry, going to do a quick intro on Kerry. Kerry is a teacher, a writer, a content creator, and someone who has learned to embrace her neurotype and all the chaos that comes with it. Since 2020, Kerry has been passionate about finding an appreciation for her strengths whilst learning to also find acceptance of her daily struggles. Kerry is starting a podcast, and I'm pumped for this because the more Australian ADHD podcasts, the better. This is an exploration of acceptance, asking what our lives could look like with a little bit more compassion. Now, I contacted Kerry to talk today about her compassion project. The reason that I did that was because we have some common themes. One of the common themes is awareness and how good it is to be aware of who you are and communicate that, take responsibility and have an understanding of who you are, and also compassion. That does come up a lot. I'm not great with compassion. It's not an area that I go well with. I'm more of the like emotionally beat myself up person. And compassion is a bit of a leap for me. So I wanted to bring in somebody who actually understands and advocates hard for compassion to really fully explain this in a way that I'm just not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. So I'd love to just say that everyone is welcome here and that regardless of where you're at on your compassion journey, it's okay. Like it's okay if you're at the beginning of your diagnosis and you're grieving this identity of who you were and how much that's changing. It's okay if, as you said, you're pretty hard on yourself. And I don't want to act like I'm the authority and the gatekeeper as someone who's never, ever criticized themselves. The reason why I have, as my husband says, a passion for compassion is because I used to be really hard on myself. I experienced a lot of depression when I was a teenager and in my early teens. I've gone to a lot of therapy. And that was when my psychologist was like, yo, has anyone ever tested you for ADHD? And I was like, no, not at all. My brothers have ADHD, but I had this whole idea of what it looked like. And the way that I internalized all my I don't like to say symptoms, I prefer to say traits, but the way I internalized it and masked and hid all of those struggles, people didn't know that I was criticizing myself. People didn't know that I wasn't having compassion for myself. And so now that I work with clients, to your question around like where you can start, is I begin by exploring what ADHD looks like to them, acknowledging how it shows up in their life. And then as they work with me, we begin to work towards allowing ourselves to have ADHD related difficulties and needs. And then one day embracing it. But I don't expect everyone to go straight into, oh my gosh, ADHD is amazing, because ADHD on a daily basis is hard. There is a struggle there. And if we only acknowledge people's strengths, we are minimizing the struggles that they're experiencing. And that's just going to cause more shame. So instead, meeting people where they are at. And if that is criticizing yourself on a daily basis, that's okay. We can work from there.
Yeah, I think you've made a great point. I find a lot of people on this podcast, the mums will say one of the most difficult times for them is in the morning. And you would probably be coaching ADHD mums quite frequently who would then talk about the morning and how hard it is. Possibly the part that I'm having trouble with is 9 o'clock or 8:30. And my husband, I'm very lucky, there's two of us in the house that have the three kids to get them out the door. I'm super lucky for that. And he does the drop off, I do the pickup, but I'm obviously hands on the entire time getting him out the door. When he drives off in his car, I don't like to say it, but I'm pretty sure the people that listen to this podcast will feel the same, where I'm pretty much like, good riddance. Obviously, I'd love to see them again and I love them deeply, but the break and them driving off is sweet music to my ears. And then when I walk back inside, I don't generally go straight to compassion. Well done, Jane. Great job. I go back into complete chaos. And I think about probably some of the ways that I could have done that better. So going straight over to compassion can be a bit of a stretch, I think, for some of us.
And also the morning routine is requiring so much executive function. It's requiring planning and prioritizing. It's requiring time management, emotional regulation, not just your own, but you're managing your children's and whatever is happening there. And organization, like getting everything together, working memory, like knowing that the kids have everything and that whatever part you play in helping them to remember them to be independent, like it is so much. It is a chaotic time. And in terms of compassion for like my morning routines or any sort of routines, I go, what's the bare minimum? What is the bare minimum here that I can do that I will feel good about? And did I do that? And if I didn't, what could I do next time? So instead of focusing on what I did wrong, what can I do differently next time? Not what can I do better, what can I do differently?
Yeah, that is a great point, actually. There's probably a lot more steps to it than what I imagined. If we take a step back, because I'm sorry, everybody that's listening, they'll know that I leap around. I've just caught myself and realized that we haven't really done a lot of an intro into Kerry and how she got diagnosed and how she got to where she is today. Apologies, guys. We're going to take a leap back.
That's okay. We're going back in time. So I was teaching in primary schools in South Australia for 5 years and experienced a lot of workload related stress and anxiety. Now, what I didn't realize is that was caused by my executive function challenges, caused by ADHD inattentive presentation. And so in 2020, when I resigned after I'd just been given permanency, this thing that everyone's meant to be like, oh, this is going to change your life. I was like, whoa, nah, I can't do this. I need to figure out what is why I'm in a constant state of stress. And it took me about 6 months, to be honest. I think that entering into therapy is the most ADHD friendly process. It's a lot of phone calls. It's a lot of meeting people and being at appointments. And so it probably took me about 6 months, met with my psychologist who happens to freaking have ADHD. And so I think she was noticing a lot of the similarities. And after a few months, she was like, hey, has anyone ever tested you for ADHD? And of course, I said, I have this idea of it. I went really well in school. That's actually what I said, which I can see now is so much ignorance to believe if you have ADHD, you can't be successful. You can't go well in school. And so I do like to share that tidbit so that people know if they're like feeling any shame or embarrassment. It's a part of the journey. It's a part of understanding and accepting that ADHD isn't the way it has been presented in the media or been presented in films and things like that, where they just give you one look at it. It's the boy, it's the fidget, it's the hyperactivity, it's very gender specific. And so as she, oh yeah, that's me. Then a lot of tears, a lot of coming to terms with what this meant. Then I went down the rabbit hole of reading every freaking book ever made on ADHD. I don't know if I can turn the screen, but you can see there's a whole cart of every book because I'm a big nerd. And I created this entire business supporting teacher well-being for 2 years. And then I went, you know what? I'd really love to work with people with ADHD. I'm going to completely restart my business, change absolutely everything, change the direction. I went and got qualified as an ADHD coach with ADHD Works in the UK. And I designed a group program called 8DHD because I like the name because it goes for 8 weeks. And now I'm designing another group program called Embrace Your Chaos.
Oh, boom. Awesome. You know what? I love that your response to your diagnosis is like to hyper-focus on the subject at length, heavily research, become an expert on something you knew nothing about 2 months ago, right? Suddenly, every single detail known to man, then you launch your own business in an area that you've struggled with. That is so me and so many other people on this podcast. Their response is, I felt sad for a day, but then I moved to action.
And it's like understanding knowledge is empowering. I do find every single person I've worked with who has ADHD, they don't often always see themselves as creative, but their curiosity is creative. The way that they come up with solutions, the way that they use divergent thinking. There's so many strengths in what we call our personality, in the same way that there are a lot of struggles in what we thought was our personality and was actually ADHD.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think that's hilarious. Are you taking medication? Has that been part of your journey or?
Yes, I was working with my psychologist, still working with her. She's a qualified ADHD coach and psychologist, which I think is just fantastic that you can work with a professional who is, she's called it ADHD literate. So they're literate in what ADHD looks like and how to empower people from a neuroaffirming place. And so after her, she sent me to a neuroaffirming psychiatrist. So someone who actually knows what ADHD looks like in adults, considering the fact that in terms of adults with ADHD, like that whole concept only came out early 90s. Like the year that I was born, I was just reading in Russell Barkley's book of adult ADHD, 1990 was when like the first clinic or something helping adults with ADHD. And I just thought, whoa, that is so recent. That is so recent. Sorry, I got on a tangent then. But medication, yes, Ritalin, 20 milligrams, 3 times a day. That is my jam. It has changed my life, but not in the sense of, oh my gosh, everything's silent. And I think sometimes people sell medication as a fix, as something that is, you won't have ADHD anymore. That's not true. I actually feel like the medication isn't doing anything until I stop taking it and then go, oh, that was the support it was giving me. So it's almost like something you take for granted.
Yeah. And I think not feeling the effects is also actually what I look for with my kids. So I've given them a little bit not too much, just I'm following the protocol. And you can tell because when my daughter Gigi is herself and she's vibrant and bubbly and she is quirky as hell, as am I, when she's herself, but she's able to get her stuff, put it in her bag and she has less anxiety and she can follow along and she can, not that I care about whether she makes a bed or not, I'm a bare minimum person, but she will make her bed and she'd be a lot more proud of who she is. And she charges a laptop before school. She just can do the things and her confidence is so much higher. That is for me a good medication result, but I did take it up a little bit, which is what the pediatrician told me to do. And I noticed that she was, and I'm air quoting, dulled down a little. I did think she was a little less vibrant. She was less herself. And I was like, that's just actually a dosage thing where that you want to be who you are. And we just knocked it back down to where it was. And she's on a very low dose, which I'm happy about because I think dose-wise, not that we're medical professionals, but I think if you can hit the lowest dose possible and get things done, have the result that you want to get, but still be who you are, then that is, for me, the best result.
And I think sometimes the conversations online, people make assumptions or get things misconstrued when people are talking about medication and talking about like the whole dull your sparkle thing. And it was the same with antidepressants for me. For everything I read, I went, oh my gosh, it's going to dull my sparkle. It's going to get rid of my personality. I started changed my life. It absolutely changed my life when I was 25. I was really struggling constantly and it really helped to get me out of that hole. And I felt like it was glasses, like I could see and appreciate the world around me and not have these holes. I was going into the hole of everything. And similar with the ADHD medication, there's that fear of, oh my gosh, it's going to dull my sparkle. I got the biggest personality around and it hasn't done flipping anything for me in terms of dulling my sparkle. All it does is I want to go to the post office. I go to the bloody post office and I'm not going, oh, I need to do this. I need to do this. And 3 hours later, I haven't done a bloody thing. Now I can just have the thought and do the thing. And that to me, when that first happened, literally the example of going to the post office, I came home and cried and I went, oh my gosh, I had something I wanted to do and I did it. And there wasn't the wall of awful. There wasn't that invisible, I don't know what it is, like resistance that stops you or that makes you think of 50 things you could be doing and then you don't do anything. Now I can think, hey, I want to brainstorm about a new program and I sit down and brainstorm about the program. I think for some people, yeah, it can make a big difference. And for other people, if medication is not your thing, that's okay too. Everyone's on their own journey.
Oh, absolutely. And regardless, this topic is important for anyone who is or isn't on medication. I just like to ask because sometimes people message me later and be like, was that person medicated? Which seems like a random thing to ask, but it does influence because it changes sometimes. I think medicated Jane is a little different to unmedicated Jane. And I went through a period, I don't know if you did, where unmedicated Jane was making choices that then medicated Jane had to do. There's that period of like you start taking medication, but the choices that you've made 6 months earlier are still impacting you. And to go do those things that unmedicated Jane had planned, I actually realized that I didn't want to do those things anymore. And that's not actually a bad thing. I thought that was probably a positive thing that I knew my limitations. For example, some friends wanted to go on a holiday and unmedicated Jane agreed. Medicated Jane was like, that's actually going to be too much for me. I don't know why I would say that I could do that. I don't know why I would think our kids could do that. That is an absolutely silly idea. And it was unrefundable because that's ADHD for you. You take, oh, I'll be fine. And when I was on the holiday, I actually realized deeply some of the decisions that unmedicated Jane makes are impulsive, not thought through, and I wouldn't make those decisions again.
Can I ask for clarification? With unmedicated Jane, is that like at night time or is that pre-diagnosis, pre-medication?
I went through a period where I was diagnosed and then I was in an absolute hole, rock bottom wise, and my psychologist, very similar to yours, said you should probably get tested for ADHD. Very similar to you. I was like, unsuccessful people that don't know what they're doing have that. I don't have that. Look how great I am. And he's like, that's not what it is. I had that's exactly the same experience. And I went through, my husband is a real health nut. He's a personal trainer, gym. He's got degrees in nutrition. That's his life.
When I found out about my ADHD, I was saying to my friends, I feel like an ADHD magnet because I'm starting to realize I attract people that are really similar to me. And like my husband is a PE teacher, absolutely loves fitness, absolutely loves like learning about his body and everything like that. And so it's just so funny. It's almost like we're like living ADHD coded lives.
You know what? It's so funny. My husband always says to me, everyone we know has ADHD, everyone. And I'm like, babe, that's just ourselves. That's our two families and our friends. That's actually not everybody. And he goes, name me one person that you don't think has it. And I was like, we don't know those people. That's my point. He's like, but there are people out there. I'm like, of course there are. But for us in our world, even the people he makes friends with at the gym, he will bring them home or whatever. And then they'll start listing to me their symptoms. So I'll be like, oh, here's another one. And he goes, oh, they're fine. It's like, okay, that's fine for them. But I'm just seeing a few things there.
I do love that at like family catch-ups now, we can see the ADHD in my siblings and in my nieces and nephews. Yeah, that'll be a diagnosis one day for the younger ones. But what I was going to say then when you're talking about all your friends is I actually got in contact with some friends from university, the ones that I really like, you connected with them on a deeper level. And it was, one of them was like, oh yeah, I got diagnosed 3 years ago. And I was like, of course you did. And the way we met was I didn't know this person and she had a sausage and I had a sausage and I went, sausage wizards. And we started having a sausage duel with our sausages. And I thought, of course this person. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
It's always a ride. If we circle back, so my husband initially was anti-medication and we went down the not using medication way and I did microdosing with mushrooms and lots of surfing and fitness in the morning. And we did that over a year's period. I changed my diet. I can tell you I did all of the things, but didn't work for me. I am on medication now and I am incredibly hyperactive and incredibly impulsive. And I will drag my family around with me wherever I think that day the wind will blow. That's not great for having smallies. It was really fun, but it isn't so much now. So if we circle back, Kerry, because we are going in circles, but I'm sure everyone's having a lovely time. Why did you create the Compassion Club and how did that happen? So where we left you, you were like, I'm going to help teachers and this is what I want to do and I'm going to learn all the things, and you really delved into it and buried yourself down the rabbit hole of ADHD. How did you then get to this compassion kind of theme?
Yeah. Once I realized that I wanted to do coaching, the first thing I wanted to design was a group program where I could work with people in a smaller capacity so that they could hear each other's stories. Because I find if you don't have access to friends with ADHD, you don't see yourself in the people around you. And you think, I'm weird, I'm a freak. You use such cruel language towards yourself. And so by putting all of these people in a room where they're all learning about ADHD, and the central theme was compassion, but what they didn't realize is first we went through 2 weeks of self-awareness, 2 weeks of exploring self-regulation, 2 weeks of understanding self-motivation, not self-discipline, because I freaking hate that word, and consistency, hate that word. So self-motivation, understanding that we are motivated differently, and then ending with self-compassion. I've run this, I'm on my sixth round at the moment. I'm working with an incredible group at the moment of 4 adults in Victoria, Australia, and then New Zealand, and then the US. And it's every single group, the number one thing that they thank me for, other than learning, is the fact that they didn't feel like they were the odd one out. They could see themselves in each other's stories, and they could see, like, sometimes you don't know that you're being highly critical until you hear someone else be highly critical. And then you go, oh wow, I wish that person had more compassion. And so, like, at the end of the program, I'm like, well, why don't we write a letter to our younger selves and tell them what we want them to hear? And sometimes by removing themselves and focusing on a younger version of them, looking at a picture, they just completely change the way that they speak. They're so kind. There's so many tears. Oh my gosh, we cry so much. And then onwards from that, I made the ADHD Compassion Club, where people can come and see where everyone is at on their journey. Oh, that person is starting to embrace their ADHD. I'm still exploring it. I'm still figuring out what it means. And so they understand, like, it doesn't have to happen overnight. No one is saying toxic positivity, ADHD. Oh, sorry if you say this, but I do not like this statement. ADHD is a superpower.
Oh, no, I don't say that.
And could you imagine going through, I don't know about you, but the throes of being a teenager and those hormone shifts, and someone going, that's a superpower, isn't it? No, it was really hard. And we need to show ourselves compassion for what we went through. And I feel like compassion is combating shame. And there is a lot of deep, entrenched shame that adults with ADHD are experiencing. And the more that they hear from people like us who are talking about ADHD realistically and saying that you can build your compassion slowly, I think the better.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. I absolutely don't think it's a superpower either. The only way that I would see anyone describe it as a superpower would be if the stars and the moon aligned and that your hyperfocus in that moment made you a lot of money. So let's say you were in COVID and
Richard Branson.
Yeah. Let's say you're in COVID and you just realize that you have all the ingredients for sanitizing in your house and you spend 3 weeks making all of the products that you could do and then you just sell it all online, right? Let's just say that then could be a superpower because it's actually monetizing and it's in the right moment and you can do it. The flip side of that, but a lot of people with ADHD have done this, is that sometimes that happens and it actually doesn't matter. And you go back in time and you look at your screenshots and your emails and you're like, wow, that was a rabbit hole that took me 6 months that went nowhere and was a complete waste of time. And I put in front of everything else and I half killed myself by not eating and drinking and having lunch to get that done. And it went absolutely nowhere. So I think if you're lucky, like the sanitizer example, maybe it points in the right direction. But even then, that person probably then has to have a year off work.
Yeah. And people look at the business that I've created because I like to talk about creating an ADHD friendly life and business. And they think, oh my gosh, yeah, that's the ADHD is your superpower. And I say, actually, ADHD has been a strength that helped me in my business. It helped me to hyper-focus on the information and build things because I got really curious and that's amazing. But it was also a struggle because I can have a week out of every month where I'm experiencing PMDD, premenstrual dysphoria, which is incredibly common with people who are ADHD and autistic as well. And that just takes me out. And I've worked with mentors who have been like, discipline, you just got to push through. That's not a possibility for me. Because that mood dysregulation, it's hitting a wall. Like it is a fact that at that time of the month, your medication can be less effective. Your focus is literally like there's an invisible wall in front of you. And if I was being highly critical and saying you're crap because you can't just show up and get your work done when you can't show up for the podcast that you booked and be there on time, or whatever it is. But I have to say, this is part of the ADHD. If I want to have the strength that I have and create the life that I want, like I have to accept those tricky days as well. I call them funky brain days. I don't know about you.
Do you plan for those? Because like I don't seem to plan very well. And then I get to that week and I struggle to interview somebody because it's like negative Nancy's on the line and I struggle to be upbeat.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. It's very like an energetic shift. And so what I say to people is that bails are always a blessing. If you need a bail on me because you are experiencing something in your life, that is okay. I hope that would be the same kind of situation could happen for me as well. And it does, like with all my clients and stuff, if they need to bail at the last minute, I go, that's okay. Enjoy your day. And they're like, oh. And it's because we live in a world where we're shamed and we're criticized. As a teacher, if I needed to have a mental health day, gee whiz, it was hard. Not just my internal criticism and guilt, but like the front office ladies that are going, where are you? Why aren't you at work? Not giving you like any compassion. Yeah.
Actually, one question, you just mentioned being a teacher and I actually wrote it down. When you were talking earlier about being a teacher and you said you went to the psychologist and you had in your mind the way that the media portrays ADHD, the 8-year old that's jumping around, boy, I was wondering, with teachers, a lot of the time, some of the ADHD mums will come onto the podcast and say, the teacher isn't seeing what I'm seeing. My daughter particularly is inattentive, blah, 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 blah. She can't do all the things. She's having breakdowns at home, but she really holds it together and masks at school. What kind of professional development is there for teachers? Because I know this is a new area and it makes it difficult.
So I recommend, like every time I find a new resource on ADHD, I'm sharing it with my teaching audience on Instagram of like 40,000 teachers around the world, but I think 86% are from Australia. And I tell them the best resource at the moment that I've found, it isn't, I'm sorry, for ADHD WA, I know that they can be incredible as well, but it's Attitude, ADDITUDE, attitude.com. It's a magazine. I did subscribe to it and you don't need to just read the articles online, but it's up to date and it reflects the current research. I think that PDs are completely different every single school, every single state. I've taught in different states and it is wild how different they are. So I really can't speak on behalf of all teachers, but I do find that in your class, if you have a child who has ADHD, who has dyslexia, dysgraphia, whatever it is, generally teachers are upskilling themselves. And so they're finding like a complete diverse amount of information, I would hope. And yeah, in terms of PDs, I know that there's Chrissy Chaos the Calm. She's fantastic. I love Russell Barkley and Sari Solden, but again, I work with adults with ADHD, so I do find that a lot of their information can be geared towards adults. And Ned Halliwell.
We can't really send them information to, like, we suggest that you read these out. I probably can't.
Well, that's it. And you don't know if those schools have specific PD, like every state has specific PD that you're meant to do. I worked in South Australia. It's very different to Victoria. So yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one. And I think it's something that it makes it hard on teachers.
Yeah, it does.
It makes it hard on teachers because there's not an agreed, a unified national resource that they're using, or at least none that I'm aware of.
Yeah. And we've done multiple episodes on schools and the education system, and not one mum or expert, typical Aussie mum, has ever said anything negative about the teachers. The teachers are not the problem.
It's the system.
Yeah, exactly. I actually feel sorry for the teachers, and I think that there's not enough young, smart people going into the profession because it's so high stress.
And what's challenging is, in terms of systemic change, teachers have no control over it, and they're the advocates for systemic change. But I don't know if you, I'll have to share this article. There was this amazing article, I think it was about 4 years ago, on a researcher looked at all of the articles on teachers in the Australian media, I want to say from 1994 until 2020, and the negativity bias, the criticism was obscene. Like percentage, I'll definitely share it with you. I don't know if you want to put it in the show notes, but
Yeah, I will.
It's just wild what teachers are copying when they just love every kid in their class. They're working to make a difference and they're just copping so much flack. Yeah.
Oh, they are. They are horrible, to be honest. In Queensland, I don't know. I thought this happened now, but, you know, you're more in this space than I am. But I know in Queensland, they have got a 5-year or probably a 4-year plan to shut special schools up here. And they've changed the intellectual, and I hate using the word disability, but let's just use it for the sake of this context.
I don't mind disability because I see disability as a reflection of society not catering for people with disabilities. Like a disability is a reflection of the world around us, not the people.
And some people like it, some people don't. I personally, language is language, I'll say whatever. But anyway, so in Queensland, they've changed it and they've raised the intellectual disability, like number or whatever it is. So you have to be very intellectually behind, very low to be able to get in. So then there's this mismatch of kids that really say should be in there, and that's what their parents are saying. That's not what I'm saying. That's what the parents are saying. The parents are saying, actually, we have moved states and now we're struggling into getting into this school. My child was learning how to catch a bus, how to get a job. They were learning life skills, and now they're in a mainstream classroom with limited support. And I actually really wanted my child to be back in that special school. And I think the extra pressure on those teachers having those children whose parents don't even really want them in that mainstream classroom, they just can't get in anywhere, is just mounting.
And what's wild is we hear both sides of that argument as teachers. We hear the parents who want their children in that school because they want them to develop social skills. Like they have a barrage of reason. The other camp has the same thing. And then teachers, like when I was, one of the reasons for the workload-related stress was I had 13 different negotiated learning plans in my classroom. It is a lot, and the teachers are not given the time and support that they need to be able to support their students.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do love the way that the Australian society that I can see, that I've accessed, really is behind the teachers, but crying out for them to be more supported, which will flow back down to the kids. And I think a lot of the teachers who are in there now, geez, they're good and they're hardy, resilient people too, to still be in that. But it's difficult from a parent point of view because you know how much pressure they're under and you don't want to mount that. But then you have to advocate. It's such a difficult one to know how and when to address things, and yet they're under-resourced.
Yeah. With my sister, her daughter is ADHD, and she sends me like some of the communications and things with the school. I do say, you may have to advocate for this, and you may have to, I suggested that she create like a binder or a book that can go from teacher to teacher so that she isn't having to re-explain and reintroduce challenges that a child is facing. And it can be really frustrating because some schools operate, I think in South Australia, they introduced the One Plan and it was all digital. And I asked the question of, can I work on this at home? Because this is going to take me hours and hours to type up everyone's One Plan. And they said, oh, no one's asked for that yet. And I thought, all these teachers are working like 8 hours on different reports and just staying on school, what, until 7 p.m., 8 p.m. at night? It is just a lot. And I really feel for the parents. I work with some incredible parents in the classroom who did an incredible job of advocating for their kid. And I always said to them, we're on the same team and I want to help your kid as much as you do. And I want you to know that I want to help your kid as much as you do.
Oh, absolutely. And I have three kids that are neurospicy. And if I just have three, I'm just trying to keep them alive and keep them from killing each other. And there's not even any emphasis on them learning anything. And that's hard. So imagine having that many kids, but then having parents then talk to me about how their then child felt in my care. Honestly, it gives me cold shivers to even think about what that would be like. But I'm hoping that perhaps this change in Queensland particularly will then mean that the system will have to change, because the closing of this will have to change. It will have to change mainstream education, I'm hoping. Okay, Kerry, if we go back to compassion for a moment, what would be your kind of like number one tip or strategy or anything that someone who's listening to this can take away and have a bit of a crack at?
So earlier in the podcast, I said, create bare minimums. And I'm a big believer in that because I think that ADHD is a maximizers. We can always look at the day as, oh, okay, I'm imagining myself when I have the most energy, when I'm the most regulated. And so it's like really shifting our standards to be a bit more realistic and asking, how can I make today easier? Looking for ways to give yourself compassion and just notice what you're doing well. So like with a lot of my clients, I say, keep a sunshine folder on your phone or keep a joy journal where you are celebrating your wins, because we have a negativity bias. Our brain just wants to focus on everything we're doing wrong. So challenge that. Have something visual. I really want to recommend, if you would like to track your mood and you would like to notice impact your ADHD, whether that's what you're eating, how you're exercising, who you're socializing with, whatever it is, please download right now as you're listening the app Daylio, Daylio. This is recommended by psychologists. My psychologist and me nerded out on the data from January. I was like, look how many wonderful days I had. And then because I was tracking data, we were able to see, but why did I have those wonderful days? Was I rested? Was I going outside and getting vitamin D and exercising? Was I spending time with my beautiful freaking husband and my dogs? What was contributing to those better days? And on the days when, because I have like a color coding system, so blue is like when I have no energy. Why do I think that is? Did I go a little bit too hard and maximize the day before and use a bit of energy from the next day? That app has changed my life. Asking how can I make it easy has changed my life, and giving myself freaking compassion for having ADHD related difficulties and needs, like acknowledging you will have them, no matter if you're medicated, no matter if you're in coaching, no matter if you're in therapy, it's okay if you struggle, and allowing yourself to struggle.
I think that's great. I think that's much more achievable than just going straight to compassion. Every now and again, you'll hear from somebody who goes, a professional organizer came to my house and told me about the chuck system, which is just don't fold anything or iron it, just chuck it in the drawer.
I did. My husband and I bought these. It's from IKEA and it's shelving. There's no cover. You can see everything. We now have one in my office. We have one in his office. We have in both of our bedrooms for our clothes, because I need to see what I own. If I can't see it, I don't know it exists. And all it means is I can just like chuck it in that little hidey hole and we're all good. No one else is going in my bedroom.
Yeah. It's so funny. When I first heard of that, I was like, oh, what else do you do? Because it had never occurred to me to fold or iron. And I was like, a chuck system. And they're like, you just chuck it in. And I was like, I've literally never lived any other way. I didn't know there was another way.
My husband, when I met him, he goes,
you have surface issues. And I was like, whoa, what does that mean? And he goes, every time you see a surface, you need to like fill it up with stuff. You don't put anything away, and you just like, there's baskets and there's buckets and there's bowls and there's, and I'm like, yeah, because if you put it in a cupboard, it does not exist in my brain. Literally, I use this water bottle every day. I sell this to my clients. I use this water bottle every day. If this was in a cupboard, I would forget that I drink water every day. That's what I mean. Make things visual and be okay with embracing your chaos and doing whatever works for you. Don't worry about how other people run their house, set up their house, manage their whatever life. Do it your way.
One point before we finish up, Kerry, that I'd love your perspective on, and I'm going to try and not share mine as I ask you. What do you think around social media and the way that, let's say, wife, motherhood, being a female is presented on social media?
Oh my gosh. Can I recommend another resource? Sari Solden's book, Women with Attention Deficit Disorder, changed my life because it was the first book that I've read that was research-based, but that was also quite conversational. And it broke down the way that women are perceived in the world and the way that they are held to this standard of care tasks and housekeeping and even down to social, because I find like socializing very tricky to navigate energetically and otherwise. And she had this whole chapter on small talk, and I hate small talk, and I don't find the point in it, and I just want to leave. I'm just like, why were you talking about reality TV? I don't care. And it's the similar thing. She had this whole chapter on care tasks, on looking after your house, on the way that we are pressured to, my mum calls it, we don't have a show home. She's like, we don't have a show home is you walk in and everything's perfectly tidy. She's like, we have a lived-in home. And I was like, Mum, I've never heard a more ADHD-friendly statement. I have a lived-in home. I want to see my stuff. My husband helps with washing. Washing, I struggle with. He's amazing. He helps with washing. He helps with cleaning. He understands that I struggle with it. And he's also opened ground why I struggle with it and how he can help and how we can work together to tackle this monstrosity of daily chores. Embrace the shit show. Another great book, man, is by Casey Davis, How to Keep House While Drowning. And she has ADHD. She's a psychologist, I believe. And she just talks about how we can create like little rituals for ourselves, but also that we can change this, that everything has to be clean all at once. She's go in a rotation. She makes a lot of really actionable suggestions that work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Or maybe it's your goal. If you are very good at working, some of us are really good at working. We're great at channeling that into a work and a monetized thing. Then possibly then do you need to work more to then pay for a cleaner? That's always been my goal. I'm like, I'm very good at working and I'm horrific at cleaning. I need to make enough money to get a cleaner and that will solve my problem.
That is also my dream, is to have a cleaner. Will loves folding clothes and I'm just so glad because like I'll try on four things and then I'll put them on the bed and he'll be like, do you want these folded? And I'm like, thank you, sir. I appreciate you, because I think for me, anything that's slow, folding is such a, it's, oh, I got to fold it this way and then you got to, but oh no. But whereas he goes, but yeah, but you're the one with the ideas. You plan our adventures and I'll do the folding. Find yourself a Will.
I wish I could just be the folder, hey? Because like, I just think that'd be so relaxing. I could never be the folder. I'd always have to be the ideas person. But sometimes I look at my husband, who is a bit of a folder. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. He's beautiful. I'm so lucky. But he would be that person that would do that task. Bless him. I should ask him if he can fold. Anyway, Kerry, is there any final remarks before we finish up? Anything that we've missed?
I suppose just a little plug, if you would like to work together, you can visit www.kerrysandford.com. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. You can follow me on Instagram or on TikTok at ADHD Compassion Coach.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. If you're listening and you're an ADHD mom, you're doing an incredible job. I think parenting is literally the hardest job in the world in terms of you're navigating so many big things in your life at the same time as your kids' life. And I hope that you can show yourself compassion, whatever that looks like for you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kerry.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. Jump over and join the Facebook community. Submit a review on Spotify or Apple. Follow stories on Instagram. Share an episode with a friend. Everything you do matters and helps spread the word about what ADHD in females looks like.